Welcome to Preaching and Preachers, a weekly podcast devoted to those who preach and to the task of preaching itself. I'm your host, Jason Allen, president of Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary. Today, I want to welcome Dr. Frank Page to the podcast. Dr. Page serves as the president and CEO of the Southern Baptist Convention's Executive Committee. He previously served as a pastor for over 35 years. It's been my joy to know him as a very good personal friend here for the past decade. Dr. Page, welcome to Preaching and Preachers.
Thank you, Dr. Allen. Honored to be with you today.
Listen, before we get into the thrust of the podcast, let me just say a word of appreciation for your service and leadership among Southern Baptists, especially as we gathered in Phoenix just a few weeks back. And what a joy it is to serve Southern Baptists, and the way you do that in such a winsome and faithful way is an encouragement to us all.
Thank you. It's a joy to serve, and I appreciate your constant encouragement.
All right, so you have a new book out. It's called Looking for a New Pastor, 10 Questions Every Church Should Ask. I know this book was birthed out of a heart of love for the church as one who pastored for 3.5 decades, but also out of a lot of experience because your ministry over the past 7 or 8 years has been extensively tied to local churches from the interim standpoint, serving churches as an interim pastor and then consulting with churches across our denomination and beyond. And I really was pleased to see this book come out, and I've enjoyed looking through it and reading over it, and it's just a great tool. Now, today on this podcast, we're going to be talking about your book, but also zooming out a bit just from your book. The book primarily is about speaking to churches as how they should engage pastors and how search committees should engage pastors. But also I want to talk about it from the other side of the coin, how pastors should engage search committees, the type of questions they should be asking, the types of issues they should seek to surface, and just some basic practical principles of that pastor and search committee, that pastor and potential church relationship. And so, my friend, I'm delighted to have you on the podcast today to talk about this. And as we do, I'm just reminded that the vast majority of listeners of this podcast are those in ministry, serving local churches, pastors, as staff members, seminary students. And so I think this is just a really helpful topic for those listening today. So let me just hop right in. First, the book in particular, what prompted you to write the book? What are you seeing? What are you hearing from the churches that motivated you to write this book?
Thank you, Dr. Allen. And the reason is because I have been a pastor a long time, and I've seen many issues rise forth during those days personally. But now, in this role, I am an interim pastor. I'm in my fifth interim pastorate. Many people say, well, why? I said, well, because I don't have enough to do during the week, so I had to find something for the weekend. Seriously, though, I love to help local churches, and I get calls virtually every day from either church or a pastor, and my day job here in the convention, but also on the weekend I'm helping these churches who are looking for pastors. So as I began looking and they began asking for assistance, I began realizing there's some things out there, but there's not much. So I felt led to write this book, and truthfully, I'm excited about it. I think it's going to help a lot of people in a lot of churches. Truth be told, Jason, I almost entitled it, and would have if my editor would have allowed it. But apparently there's a copyright issue. I wanted to name it Pastor Search for Dummies. That's kind of a joke, but the truth is many people who go into pastor searches really don't know what they're doing. They may be experts in medicine, education, whatever, law, but they're really not capable of even asking the right questions for a pastor. So I did it out of a sense of a desire to assist.
You know, and you raise a good point there. Many times a congregation, they may be stocked, filled to the brim with all sorts of professionals, doctors, lawyers, educators, people that have vast experience in other arenas of life, leading a business, what have you. But that search committee may be filled with individuals who've never served on search committee before, who've never been charged with leading a church to find their next pastor. And so it can be a daunting responsibility. And look, you have a bit more exposure than I do, but still I hear from churches all the time. And it's interesting to me how you can have grown men and women who are accomplished and confident and skilled and experienced in other arenas of life that can be brought to their knees literally and figuratively through the pastor search committee process.
Many of them think that, you know, there are transferable skills in every vocation. We know that. But they really think because they've been to church their whole life, they know what they need to know. And then they can become a keenly aware that it's way beyond their own particular situation. And you're right, they are brought to their knees when they recognize, oh my goodness, this is a level in an area we're not familiar with. The church I'm in an interim in now, the church, the pastor was there 43 years, I like to say 143. Not one single member of the search team, and there are 15, too many, 15, and none have ever been on a search team.
Wow, 15, that is a team. That's a massive amount of people.
It's too many.
Well, listen, along those lines, let's hop in here. What are some common pitfalls you see churches make, or pastors, either party, in this search committee process? What are common pitfalls?
Yeah. One thing is, as we've just pointed out, there that you don't know what you don't know. So people just don't realize the lack of really competence in that area. So that's one of the big pitfalls. There is, on some occasions, a hubris. But most of the times, it's a gleeful, willful ignorance. They just don't know. But then there are other things. The church, for example, I have a section in the book entitled 10 Things a Pastor Wishes the Search Committee Had Revealed. Well, pastors miss this often. They think that when they're dealing with that pastor search committee or team, that the church is like those people. Well, they become quickly aware that those people are different than most people in church. They're on that committee because they're great leaders. They're more committed. They're more popular. They're whatever. And they are not the normal rank and file church members. So, unfortunately, a lot of pastors miss that fact. They think, well, I got a great church here because that past church team is so solid, so loving, and so committed. Well,
you know,
they
I'm
are
a,
not
just
representative.
Right. And I that's a key issue. I had a conversation a few years back that was will forever be etched in my mind. It was a gentleman who was in the final stages of interviewing with a particular church, a prominent church, and I had familiarity with the church and the church and the city, and so he called me kind of for input on it, and everything was sounding good and encouraging, and then he made the comment just kind of dropped it in there that he told me where he was going to live in proximity to the church. And alarm bells went off my head because where he was intending to live is so far away from the church that people in the congregation, they would interpret that as him like living in another city. I mean, it's like no one would live there that far away and be perceived as actually being able to effectively lead the church because it was literally living in another town, which really felt like another city, especially to people that live in that city and are part of that church. And I kindly, but did push back. I said, look, I'm concerned about that. I'm afraid that would be a real limitation to your ministry, and folks are going to have a concern over that if you live in another town like that. And he said to me, he said, well, I was concerned too. And I raised that in the search committee. They all said they're fine with it. And I said, look, it doesn't matter what the search committee says they're fine with. I'm telling you, seven people, even though they agree with that, you're going to have, you know, 1,000 more that are going to be up at arms once they figure out you've bought a house in another city. And so I do think that the search committee and the pastor or the prospect getting down to reality and getting down as to how accurately or inaccurately does this search committee reflect the congregation as a whole? And it's not just about geographical realities. It's about theological realities. It's about the direction of the church. It's about leadership structure. A whole host of considerations can surface in that. Would you agree?
Absolutely. And they just need to be aware that the real church is very different than those. I like to say it this way, Jason. You know, if I might use a little bit of a biblical analogy, Jacob went to bed with Rachel, but he woke up with Leah. Well, yeah. Many people think the search committee is Rachel and the church is, but then they get there and they wake up and say, oh, I don't have Rachel, I have Leah. Well, yeah, that's right. There's a different reality when you go out amongst the people. And, you know, the same thing can be said, by the way, of a pastor search committee. When it gets the resume, it thinks it has Rachel. But when the guy really gets involved, they realize, oh, I've got Leah. But anyway, a little bit of humor there.
Yeah, and that is not a good reality. That's not a good thing to wake up to. Say, you know, I talk here with our students often about search committees and this phrase that we have a lot of potential. You know, the church has a lot of potential. And I just remind our students, you know, a lot of churches do have a lot of potential, but virtually every church in America thinks they have a lot of potential. And it can sound really reassuring to hear a search committee say, Jason, Frank, this congregation has a ton of potential. And I just challenge our students and say, look, there's never been a search committee in America that said, we want to tell you on the front end, this church really doesn't have any potential. How does a pastor rightly assess what truly is the potential of the church? How eager they are to be led and to be fed? How does the preacher, the pastor, suss that out?
Yeah, thank you. And that is an excellent point. And the truth is, I sat beside a young pastor at a large church, a fairly large church in the Deep South that was celebrating their 200th anniversary. This young pastor was there 1 month, and he leaned over to me and said, this church has such great potential. And I said, in somewhat of a, I'm afraid it was patronizing, I said, young pastor, please listen to me. I said, why do you think this church has potential? Why is it not actuality? And that's true in our own Christian life. It's true in every church. Why are we dealing with potential and not actuality or reality? There's a reason it's potential and not real. And that's what you've got to discern. So every pastor, Jason, has to say, okay, do they really have potential? And you look at the demographics. You look at the all the factors that show potential growth. You look at the needs of the church. You look at the age groups of the church. Okay, well, we need to grow this much here. You look at this vast college campus near us not being touched. Well, why is it not being touched? First of all, you've got to discern the impediment. You've got to realize, why is the potential? So you've got to look, because the truth is, many churches will, the pastor search committee, that wonderful 7 or 8 people will say, pastor, we want to change. But when you get into the real church, they say, we want to change, just don't change what I like. Well, there's a reason it's potential. So you've got to discern the reasons, the impediments to true growth. And that's where the pastor's vision and strategy come in. You've got to, first of all, stay with the people long enough to help them change. But most pastors don't give it long enough to see real transformation. They cut and run at the first sign of trouble. So there's a longevity issue, but there is a vision and strategy issue. Are you really, you're going to take these people from A to take them to B, from where they are, the point of reality, to the point of transformation? So the answer is not easy. It does involve identification of the impediment, but it also involves a strategy and a vision and a longevity that says we're going to move in a new direction. So say evangelistically, church has only baptized 20 people. Well, how are we going to get that to 50? Well, there's a whole mindset transformation that has to occur. Training, exampling, preaching, etc. So it's a multifaceted answer.
That's very well stated. Now, I want to transition to just another real essential component of all of this, and that is the word expectations. The expectations the church would have for the pastor, the expectations the pastor would have for the church. How important is it to suss out the expectations, and how might both the church, the search committee acting on behalf of the church, and the pastor kind of really sort through that?
I think it's very important, Jason, and that's a great point. It's certainly, you start with the committee to ask what their expectations are. And we know reality is many committees have unrealistic expectations. And they expect the church to double in 5 years. They expect the baptisms to go up. They expect the problems, by the way, which they often have not revealed fully to the candidate. And many candidates come back later and say, why didn't they tell me the problems they were having? Well, if they had told you, probably wouldn't have come. what are the expectations? Are they realistic? Are they doable? And by anybody's stretch of the imagination. So both the pastor and the church need to have realistic expectations, and that is often not the case.
Hey, Dr. Page, let's pause here for just a moment for a word of update from Midwestern Seminary.
Midwestern Seminary's Doctor of Ministry degree program is your next step in training for local ministry. The Doctor of Ministry program at Midwestern Seminary is designed to equip and train leaders with a commitment to the local church. with multiple emphases available, including counseling, church revitalization, expository preaching, leadership, and missions, among others. Your program provides the equipping you need in practical theology for direct church work and ministry leadership. And because all of our doctoral programs are modular, you don't have to leave your current ministry to pursue your degree. For more information, visit mbts.edu today. That's mbts.edu.
All right, we're back now with Dr. Page talking about his new book, Looking for a New Pastor, and considering the topic, The Pastor and the Search Committee. How much along the lines with expectations, how much would you say the past is prologue for the church or the pastor? In other words, let's say a search committee's interviewing a pastor and his previous congregation, it was a bumpy ride because let's say he was aloof and he was really given a study, did not work hard to build relationships with people. But he's saying to the search committee, he said, look, I really learned from that. I've grown. I have to be more intentional about developing relationships. I have to be more intentional about the more pastoral/shepherding side of my ministry. How should a search committee process that and take into account one's previous experience and what happened, their track record, so to speak, but also not leave margin for growth and for maturity and for a new start?
That's a great question, and I think the point is the honesty of the candidate. If the candidate does reveal some awareness of his weaknesses and shows forth, in all honesty, a plan, a program, whatever you want to call it, for implementation and correction of those inadequacies, that's a huge statement. The truth is most of us don't. We're not quite so forthright and honest with the committee. And I think that would be a huge sign. This is a guy that really does get it. He does want to grow. He does want to change. And I think a committee can come alongside a pastor like that and encourage them and set up an accountability group as well as an encouragement group of godly men to come alongside that pastor to say, okay, here's what you said you want to do. We're going to help you with that. So I think there are ways to help us all grow, of course. There are ways to take an honest, willing pastor who wants to grow and see that that happens. And he's gonna fail in some ways. We all do, and he may not ever get to the point he wishes. But if there is measurable growth, I think the church should celebrate that and encourage that.
Yeah, and you brush up against the next topic I want to engage, and that's the topic of honesty, of a candidate being honest with a search committee, of the church being honest with a candidate, and look, that cuts both ways. There's a sense in which all of us, as candidates, as we've been candidates in a church, you can't fully unpack your vision for the church because maybe you don't fully have it yet. That'll be developed over a period of months after you're there. But at the same time, you do need to lay on the table where you think God is leading you to take the church, how God has wired you, your beliefs, theological beliefs, your beliefs about leadership, about local church ministry, discipleship, mentorship, everything that really is germane. You need to be able to engage that. And so how would you counsel those listening to this podcast? Again, maybe they're pastors who have been or will be interviewing. Maybe they're laypersons listening who will be on a search committee. How do you really get at honesty? And then how high should we value that pursuit?
Yeah, I think the key comes in. I think it should be valued greatly. Unfortunately, it's lacking in many places. As I say in my book, unfortunately, when you ask a candidate's strengths and weaknesses, usually they will give their strengths, but usually they're pretty parsimonious with the weaknesses. Well, I guess I would just say I'm not patient. I'm just not patient with sin. That's probably my biggest weakness. Well, you would certainly hope for a candidate to be more open than that.
Right.
But again, he says, well, if I'm too open, they won't hire me. Well, again, I think obviously honesty is the best policy, to be honest and say, these are my areas of strength. These are my areas of weakness. Here's what I'm doing to work on those. But again, a church that will come alongside and encourage and hold a pastor accountable, that is so important. But honesty is so desperately needed in these situations on both the pastor and the church. They need to tell the whole story. Now, we know we have problems. We know we have issues. Here are the issues we know of. We may not know everything, and they may not, but they need to be honest with what they do know. And the same thing with the pastor. He may not be aware of his own inadequacies. And that being said, the right questions help bring forth those. And here I do, in the book, talk about some questions to ask to help. For example, Jason, how do you handle conflict? Well, okay, he can give you a good answer. Give us a specific example of how you handled conflict in your last church. What did you learn from that? How did you handle that? Did you see good growth come from that? Was it hurtful? There are ways to ask questions that really began to reveal a depth of strength and or weakness. And then also the importance also of asking not just the printed references or resume, but to dig deep and vet the candidate. And there are ways to find other persons who may or may not, or who may know the person, and who may or may not tell the truth. But often in the references, we really begin to glean the strengths and weaknesses of the candidate. And as the candidate is vetting the church, we begin hearing of issues in the church the committee may or may not have shared.
That's very well put. Time is flying by here, but I do want to engage a couple of other topics here. The next one is just the topic of readiness, when a man is ready for a church. And let me just give you a little personal illustration. Just 2 weeks ago, I received a reference call for a young man who's a seminary student here, graduating with his MDiv. I know him, not super well, but I knew him as a student. I know him by name. I've been around him some. I think the world of him. He's bright. He's gifted. He's humble. I mean, just everything you'd be looking for in a 28-year-old man going into ministry. And the church calling is a church that's really pretty big. It's about, they have about 500 in worship. It's down in Arkansas. And they were describing the church, and they said, "Dr. Allen, you're your reference." And I said, "I'm happy to be a reference for him." And I said, "What's the size of the church?" And they said 500. And they said, "We understand that the young man has never pastored before." And I just told him, I said, "Look, that's a big jump to go from walking with your MDiv degree to passing a church of 500. I said, "Look, I'm going to be honest. If a young man can do it, I think this young man you're interviewing can, because I think that highly of him, his gifting, his zeal, his convictions, his humility. But just know that that's a really big jump to make, and I will encourage him, and I am encouraging you to be really careful and diligent about this process, because that's a big jump to make." We're talking about the issue of readiness. And so help us to know, again, whether the pastor listening to this podcast or a search committee listening, how do you sense if a person is ready for that next step, whether it's the size of the church or the leadership expectations of the church? How do you get at the issue of readiness?
Great point, Dr. Allen. And we know in the financial world, past results do not guarantee future results, but we look at the past. So it is, that's a big issue, and I would concur that that would make me nervous for someone to go straight out of seminary into a church of that size. Why? Because there are often places where experience comes into play, where you've learned how to deal with staff, certain crises, situations that a brand new minister may not have experience in. Certainly, as you look at that person, you look for those skills that in which they can grow in those areas. But it would make me nervous also, to be honest with you. I usually like to tell people, we are, all of us that have ambition, and I certainly do, always thought I could do more than probably I could do. But I usually encourage people to start small, gain some experience, learn how to deal with situations on a smaller level than before you go into the bigger levels, because a larger church has lots more problems than a small church, and some of those problems are far more complex, and it's taking a risk, in all honesty, a risk about readiness, and the church has to decide under God's leadership, is he really ready to take on this, even though we see no sign of past expertise and experience in these areas.
One other question here before we pull this together, and that is the topic of questions. And again, here's what I encounter often on our campuses. I talk to students and who are interviewing. They want to get to the bottom of the church. They'll hear me encourage them to get to know the church, familiarize yourself, et cetera, know what you're getting yourself into. And they'll have a list of like 127 questions want to ask the search committee, you know. And I'll say, look, you just cannot do that. First of all, the rhythm of this relationship is you need to be deferential to them. They are interviewing you. There's a time when that matures. If it does mature, it would be right and appropriate for the focus to move to you to ask questions of them. But no human committee is going to be able to work through, you know, 127 questions. I said, you really need to dial in on a few questions that are revealing or that answer really a host of sub-questions. And so I asked them, said, you know, just by way of document, it's appropriate to ask for the church's budget and bylaws. That way you know how the church is legally structured and how they allocate their money. And if the church has, you know, a $10,000 line item to maintain the church cemetery, but a $1,000 line item for missions, then that tells you something about their priorities. And so with that analogy in mind, how would you encourage us to deal with this issue of questions and the type of questions we should ask to really get at the bigger issues as to what this church is truly like?
Great. I think the issue is patience and a tiered approach. You are exactly right. You cannot expect anyone to answer all those questions up front. But as you move deeper into the interview process, then you ask more and more detailed questions. And as you just said, there are ways to get a lot of information without just bombarding a committee with too many questions. So begin asking general questions about general emphases of the church, for example, budget, governing kind of documents. And then as you move into the tiered approach of a deeper and deeper walk, I say it's like dating. You know, you're dating more and more. You get to know that person more and more. And then later you get engaged, and then later you get married. Well, you learn more and more along the way. And that's the way it is in the interview process. You just can't blast them with too much too quick. It will scare them, and they're just not capable of answering all those things.
Well, Dr. Page, this has been so helpful, and I want to come in again on the back end of this podcast. Your new book, Looking for a New Pastor, 10 Questions Every Church Should Ask. But again, this is not just about a church interviewing a pastor. Throughout this book, it's chock full of advice and counsel for those who are on the pastoral side, the interviewee, the one who's being interviewed to ask questions as well and to learn the process. It's out by B&H Books, and again, it's by my good friend, Dr. Frank Page. Thank you for being with us today on Preaching and Preachers, Dr. Page.
Thank you, Dr. Allen. My joy.
Thank you for listening to Preaching and Preachers. For more information, please visit my website, jasonkallen.com.